Hi, everyone, and welcome to today's call. This is Denise Newneighbor, the director of the North Carolina Coalition to End Homelessness. We're getting started. We may have a few more folks joining in, but we want to go ahead and get started. We had an overwhelming response to today's call, and really want to thank you all for taking the time to call in. We will be following along on the presentation online. That's at the join.me link that was sent out in the email today. You should be able to go to that link, put in your name and hit knock, and you'll be able to follow along with us on the presentation. We've also posted materials for today's call at www.ncceh.org/ACH. That's a new page that just went live, so if you went there before and it's not showing up, just hit refresh on your web browser, and that should pull those materials up for you. So we have a lot to cover in today's call. Because we have so many people on the line, we have muted all of the lines, so you should be able to just hear us. Hopefully that will help take care of some of the background noise. We do, however, welcome your questions and input, and so we'll ask you to contact us via the chat. You can see the chat there on join.me. You can ask your questions there. We'll definitely take questions at the end, and some questions we may be able to address as we go, but we do have a lot to cover today, so let's get started. We really thank everyone for calling in, and we've got a lot of folks who may not be familiar with the Homeless Coalition. We have been around since about 2001. We've had full-time staff since 2004. So we can't really say that we're as young of an organization as we used to be, but we really started around the creation of 10-year plans, and there has been some great progress made since the coalition has been around, and we're really happy to work with all of you who work towards that progress. We at the coalition work on kind of two sides of homelessness. On one side, we're working on the policy side, working at the state and federal levels, advocating for good policy and adequate funding. And then on the other side, we really work a lot with providers and leadership directly in the field, making sure that the implementation of policy is going well. It's a great position for us because it means that we get to really influence that policy with the information that we bring from all of you in the field. And that's really what we're doing on this call today is bringing some of the policy information to you, but also really setting a new process in place so we can get that information from on the ground from you, so we can get it back up to our policy folks, so we can make sure that those individual experiences are helping to influence the big policy decisions. So if you do know us and you've heard us talk, you know that in a lot of our presentations, we talk about the history of homelessness, and that homelessness as we know it today has not always been around. And when you've heard us talk about it, you've heard us name one of the big factors of creating homelessness was deinstitutionalization. So you've heard us talk about how in the 60s and 70s there was a growing movement in the mental health field that said that individuals with disabilities shouldn't have to live in isolation in institutions, but they should be able to live in community given the proper supports. When that happened, when we started to see this deinstitutionalization movement, some people who were moved from institutions into the community, all of the proper supports weren't put in place for them. Now, I usually talk about how this deinstitutionalization movement led to chronic homelessness. So the chronic homeless are those individuals or families that have an adult that has a disability. So it's a disabled individual or a disabled head of household that has been homeless for at least 1 year, or who has experienced 4 episodes of homelessness in 3 years. So these are the folks that tend to actually languish in our system. Once they become homeless, they have a really hard time getting the supports they need to get out. And for those of us who work in the homeless system, it's a very complex system that we have to navigate in order to make sure we get them the rental assistance that they need, that they get all of the services that they need, including things like case management, mental health treatment, substance abuse treatment, medical care, all of those things, along with adequate income. Now, we've seen a lot of progress in this in the past few years. We've actually have 3 communities that have greatly seen just huge reductions in chronic homelessness, Asheville in Buncombe County, Guilford County, and the New Hanover area, which is the Wilmington area, have all seen big reductions in chronic homelessness, anywhere from between 60 to 80%. So we're just so At this point, I think in homelessness, we've been really, really excited and energized to see that we now know what to do with these disabled individuals that we had never really had the resources to help support them before. So we've really seen a lot of change in our system because of the creation of permanent supportive housing. But now when I normally talk about deinstitutionalization and those individuals who became homeless as a result of it, that's just one piece of the story. We've just focused on the people that didn't get supports in the community, those ones that ended up homeless. That's not the full picture. They're just a portion of the individuals that were moved from institutions into the community. In North Carolina, a lot of the response came from the adult care homes. Adult care homes were used as the answer for individuals who needed a place to live when they were moved out of institutions. And a lot of it, they were provided a place to live along with some services there. And for a lot of folks, that worked. Usually when we're talking about our homeless population, those are individuals who either weren't accepted into adult care homes or didn't want to live there. So we're talking about a little bit of a different population, but they're mostly individuals with the same needs, the same kind of needs. And so they'll need the same kind of resources in the community. Now, when folks have moved out from institutions into adult care homes, in some cases, they've been good situations, and in some cases, they've been bad situations. But you know what? That's not what we're here to discuss. That's an entirely different call. The bottom line for us is that these individuals living with disabilities need support in order to live in the community. They need support in order to live in the least restrictive setting possible, which is permanent supportive housing. Like I said, we have a lot of experience with permanent supportive housing. I think when the coalition staff here first started to hear about adult care homes, we really said, you know, that's not really our issue. That's not really our issue. We're interested in preventing homelessness, but those folks are housed, they're connected to resources. There's no reason that this transition should make them homeless. And we really tried to make it honestly not our issue. We feel like we have enough to work on with all of those folks who are already homeless. And we really wanted to say, you know, we'll stay kind of on the periphery of the issue, but we won't, we don't want to be at the center. And we just have been continued to be pulled into that conversation more and more. Some of that pulled from some partners, and a lot of that is just pulled by our own selves and seeing that we really do have not just the coalition, but all of you who provide permanent supportive housing and work with the homeless have a real key role here. And a lot of that is because in North Carolina, all of you who provide permanent supportive housing, most of our experience with permanent supportive housing is with the homeless. So it's our homeless program. So we've got a lot of knowledge that we want to share with others as others in the system start to embark on permanent supportive housing as well. We've really seen that permanent supportive housing has been the answer for individuals with disabilities who are homeless. It has provided that long-term housing and supports. We know that SOAR is an essential piece to getting folks linked to the income and the Medicaid that opens doors to housing. These are all pieces that we know will need to be put in place for other individuals. And so I think we'll all continue that discussion of what needs to be put in place, and we'll get into more of those details today. But what we want to mostly do is provide you with an overview of what's happening, what are all these different pieces that are coming together, and the first thing that we can do as a homeless system, which is make sure that we're tracking people who are coming out of these adult care homes so we can make sure that we do get resources for these individuals. So the state of North Carolina has not made permanent supportive housing available to meet the need. We simply don't have enough, and that's not where the state has been invested. Instead, they've really invested and relied heavily on settings like adult care homes. There are some major changes underway now that will begin to address this permanent supportive housing shortage. In many ways, what we're experiencing today is continued deinstitutionalization. We're continuing to move towards protecting the rights of individuals with disabilities. We believe at the coalition that options are good. We think that all options are good and that every individual should be able to have choices. We definitely think that permanent supportive housing is a choice that has been limited. And we're looking forward to that option starting to grow. And we know, so we think, you know, that the overall piece of all of these changes, the overall direction, I guess, that we're headed, we think is a good one. We think it's good for the individuals that we serve, and we think it's good for all of those individuals who are in the system now. But we know that transition isn't always pretty. I think all of us have been through a lot of transition over the last few years, the last decade. All of those of you who are joining us from the mental health system, we know you're in constant transition. And all of us who are in the homeless field, we know there's been a lot of transition in the past decade as well, particularly in the last few years as we're getting ready for HEARTH's implementation. So we know transition isn't pretty, but we know it gets us to a good place. And right now, the state is charged with coming up with a transition plan. But unfortunately, we are finding ourselves in the situation that there has been change before there's a plan enacted. And that's really why what has kind of prompted this call today. We are starting to hear some individual stories from some of you who have been telling us you've started to see folks in your shelters or show up homeless on the streets from adult care homes. So we're not here to talk about the transition plan. There's going to be a lot of conversation around that, we're sure. There's actually a commission that's created to talk about the transition plan that Emily's going to talk about a little bit today. But we're not here to talk about the plan. We're here to talk about how can we try to prevent a second wave of homelessness from deinstitutionalization. We know that's what really led to our chronic homeless problem in the past. But you know what? We're in a different place now than we were then. We know what the lessons, we know we can use the lessons that we've had from the past. We can learn from the past, and we can prevent individuals with disabilities from falling through the cracks and getting stuck in homeless shelters or camping out. We know that your help, we know that your help is essential. We really need your help to ensure that the state puts a good system of assistance in place. We know that individuals will need rental assistance. We know they're going to need appropriate services, and we know they're going to need access to income. So we hope that all of these things are a piece of that transition plan. And unfortunately, we've got some folks who are coming out now without that plan. And so what we want to do today is talk about why folks are coming out, and then also what we can do to try to track that to make sure that there's some resources put in place in the future. So on today's call, we'll give a brief overview of why individuals are beginning to transition out of adult care homes. We know we can't answer all of your questions today, nor do we claim to be the experts. We don't know it all, but we do know that we can all do better than this. Your participation in today's call, particularly those of you who are frontline staff, is important in helping us gather the information about how this transition is affecting individuals. So I'm going to turn the call over to Emily Carmody, one of our project specialists here at the Homeless Coalition, and she'll get us started with some of that more detailed information as to what's going on in the system to lead to these discharges.
Good afternoon, everyone. We wanted to start off the presentation today with some background on exactly what is an adult care home. These are residences that are throughout the state that are established to help those who are aged and disabled adults in our communities. They often provide 24-hour supervision and what are called personal care services, so help with activities of daily living with individuals. They do not necessarily provide medical services and are not necessarily as technical as, say, a nursing home with a nursing staff and doctors on staff. These are adult care homes that may hand out some medication management but are not really tasked with providing medical services. Some other names that they are called in our state are family care homes. That's really for the smaller facilities of 2 to 6 residents, or rest homes. And another important distinction to make is that these are not group homes. Group homes are a separate facility that are licensed for particular individuals and really provide an intensive amount of supervision and services. So the DHHS, the North Carolina's Department of Health and Human Services website, actually provides a lot of detail about what is an adult care home. And when we post these slides with the notes on our webpage, you'll be able to see the link for that webpage to really read more about it. But we just wanted everyone to be aware about what an adult care home is and what they are providing and what they are not. So there's two issues at play in our state at the moment that are affecting discharges of individuals from adult care homes in our state. The first is regulations that concern what are known as institutions for mental disease, or IMDs. That is probably a buzzword you have been hearing around the community. IMDs, this issue relates to our state and ongoing negotiations with CMS. CMS is the federal agency that oversees Medicaid and Medicare, and they have regulations concerning the ability and actually the inability to bill Medicaid for services provided in an IMD setting. What you all need to know in the field is that for IMD, it's a very quick and often confusing process. This is the issue that is currently impacting most discharges from adult care homes, and it is constantly evolving. It is a real challenge to stay on top of the issues regarding IMDs. As of Friday, for example, there's been a restraining order placed so that individuals within IMDs will be able to retain their Medicaid, something that just came up at 5 p.m. on Friday that we are just now on top of. So these are constantly evolving issues, and it's really important if you're interested to stay on top of them and really trying to figure out who in your community, possibly your LME MCO or DSS, are good to stay on top or and in the know about these issues. And the other thing you need to know with the IMD issue is that currently there are no resources committed to individuals who are being discharged due to the IMD issue. People are coming out without resources, and communities are really having to piece things together for their own response. And we know that many communities are taking very different routes to address this issue. So again, it's another thing that you really need to be plugged into your community to know what's going on with IMDs if your community has an IMD that's been recognized and what the process is. The second issue that is affecting or will impact our discharges from adult care homes in our state is the ongoing investigation and negotiations between our state, North Carolina, and the Department of Justice at the federal level. And this is due to violations that the Department of Justice found within our system that violate the Olmstead decision. And we'll talk a little bit more about what the Olmstead decision is. What you all need to know, first of all, is that the DOJ issue is not currently impacting discharges from adult care homes. This is something that will happen in the future, but is not directly impacting those discharges now. The DOJ is also looking to have planned transitions. And for the most part, if you look at other settlements, and we'll talk about this, they have a set number of people that are supposed to come out per year. The DOJ transitions will come with resources and hopefully including training for providers. So they will come with some rental assistance, some services piece, and some training for the providers. So resources are attached to DOJ, but not to IMD at this point. DOJ is a much slower process once those transitions begin, and will be a much more planned out transition process in our state. So to get a little bit deeper into both of these issues, I first wanted to speak about IMDs. And so what is an IMD, and how do you know if an adult care home is an IMD? That's been an ongoing question in the process. What we do know is that CMS defines an institution for mental disease as a hospital, nursing facility, or other institution like an adult care home with more than 16 beds that are primarily engaged in providing diagnosis, treatment, or care for persons with mental disease. So our adult care homes in our state can fall into this category if they are a 16-bed facility or more, and more than 50% of their residents have a primary mental health diagnosis as the reason for them being in the adult care home. Note that you all can make with this is that it's not just a singular facility. If one facility is 15 beds, but the same company owns another facility that also has 15 beds, then that would count together as a 30-bed facility. So there's some technicalities in that to be aware of and to be in conversation in the community about. Institutions that have been labeled as an IMD cannot receive Medicaid funding for services provided to residents according to CMS regulations. So this is the big issue. Individuals who reside in an IMD cannot receive Medicaid funding for any of the services that are provided to them, and that is one of the risks of individuals being in an IMD is losing their Medicaid funding. And then, of course, the adult care home cannot bill Medicaid for the services that they're providing. Again, we will have some more supplementary information about IMDs in our notes that we'll post on our website after the call. Some more details regarding the Olmstead decision. The Olmstead decision was actually a Supreme Court ruling in June of 1999. The Olmstead case was brought by an attorney on behalf of two individuals in Georgia who remained in their state hospital systems for years. And the Supreme Court decided in that case that institutionalizing a person with disability that could live in the community if the right supports and housing were provided is a form of discrimination according to the Americans with Disabilities Act. So this decision requires that states provide those services and programs and housing so that people can live in what's called the most integrated setting possible. And that phrase has become a real buzzword, the most integrated setting possible. And as Denise said, when we hear that word and when we talk about what that means, it really looks a lot like permanent supportive housing programs that we have in our communities. And again, we'll have more resources around Olmstead when it comes to the notes that we'll post on our website. So what does this mean for North Carolina? Well, a complaint was brought forward on behalf of consumers within our system by the Disability Rights North Carolina organization, and the Department of Justice investigated and issued a findings letter in July of 2011, stating that they had found that North Carolina had an institutional bias in their system, meaning that people were being institutionalized rather than the state providing those services for them to live in the least restrictive setting possible. So since that findings letter was issued, the state has been in ongoing negotiations with the Department of Justice about what kind of settlement we could have rather than going to court. Right now, the state is pursuing conversations around a settlement, but if those do not work, then the Department of Justice and the state would then go to the court to decide the matter. We are not privy to those conversations about the settlement, but what we can do and what you can do as a service provider is to look to other states for the examples that they provide for what other states have settled with the Department of Justice. Things you'll see within those settlement examples are tenant-based rental assistance provided by the state for those individuals, service alterations, and often there's a set number of people that are required to move out of whichever institutional setting they're investigating per year for a certain number of years. And we will provide, there's a great website that provides all the different findings for the other states that are going through this process and have also reached settlements with the DOJ. And again, I just want everyone to be clear that residents that are leaving adult care homes now are not doing so because of the DOJ process. That has more to do with the IMD issue at play. So we don't know the details when it comes to North Carolina and the negotiations with the Department of Justice, but what we do know and what is public record is that in the revised budget for 2012, the General Assembly included certain key items in what they're calling the Transitions to Community Living Initiative. This initiative centers around these issues of individuals coming out of adult care homes. So a couple of items for you to be aware of within the budget. There's a fund called the Transitions to Community Living Fund. Part of that fund, roughly $10 million, will go towards tenant-based rental assistance for DHHS to use for rental assistance for individuals coming out of the adult care homes. And then $40 million of that fund is going to adult care homes for what they call the temporary short-term assistance to adult care homes. And this is for DHHS to provide to adult care homes to support them continuing services to residents through the discharge process that they are starting now implementing with IMDs and moving forward with DOJ. And finally, the other thing mentioned in the budget for the Transitions to Community Living Initiative was that the General Assembly established a Blue Ribbon Commission on Transitions to Community Living that will advise the Department of Health and Human Services. In the notes for these slides that we'll put on our website, we have a direct quotation of all the legislation from the budget, and you can see who they have designated to be on that Blue Ribbon Commission moving forward. So the other thing that we know about that it has been passed through the General Assembly is what's known as House Bill 677. And House Bill 677 has outlined the discharge team procedures for individuals leaving adult care homes. And we wanted to review that process with you guys because this is what adult care homes are supposed to use this process when they have someone that they are planning to discharge from their facility that they do not have an appropriate place to discharge to identified. So according to House Bill 677, this discharge process has been established to provide adult care homes with greater flexibility in the transfer and discharge of residents, and to also give appeal rights to adult care home residents about discharge decisions. They have mandated that the discharge teams explore an array of housing options and utilize expertise of community members to locate proper housing for residents as they're coming out of adult care homes. And they also mandated that these discharge teams should be convened where the adult care home is located and not necessarily where that individual's Medicaid, which county that Medicaid is funded through, or where that Hello, we're back. Sorry about that. We've had to switch to a different conference call line than we usually use because of the number of people who called in to this call today. Can everyone hear me now? If you could please respond in the chat if you can hear me now on join.me. Yes. Okay, great. I'm sorry about that, guys. So again, we were talking about the adult care home resident discharge teams and the requirements in that process. I'm going to start from the beginning of the slide when I think people initially couldn't hear me. So your Department of Social Services in your county is to be the primary contact for discharge teams for the adult care homes. And each DSS in a county with a licensed adult care home has to establish a discharge team. And they have to include at least one member from DSS and one from your local LME MCO. Other housing programs and other housing resources can also serve on that committee if DSS and the LME MCO deem it necessary. So if you would like to be a part of that adult care home resident team, it would be good to be in touch with your Department of Social Services to provide your input and expertise. So the procedure as it stands is that the adult care home retains the responsibility for the resident until their discharge is complete. And the adult care home is to convene the discharge team if they have someone that they are planning to discharge and issued a notice of discharge and there's not an appropriate destination prior to issuing that notice of discharge. The adult care home can also get the discharge team together if during the discharge process the place where they were being discharged to is no longer available and there's no appropriate destination for that individual. So if at the time a discharge notice is issued to a resident and the adult care home does not have an appropriate place to discharge them to, they must request the discharge team from the Department of Social Services to convene. The discharge team has to convene within 24 to 72 hours from the request. And the discharge team also has to meet on an emergency basis if that person has to be discharged prior to the 30-day period. So most discharges, once the notice is issued, will have a 30-day process before they are released from the adult care home. And in that time, that's when the discharge team can find an appropriate place for them to go. So the residents of adult care homes have an appeal right. They can, the adult care home has to notify the resident of its intent to initiate the discharge at least 30 days prior to the discharge, except in situations where the health or safety of the residents or others is endangered. And the resident has the right to appeal the discharge. The appeals go to the hearing unit at the Division of Medical Assistance. And again, all of this is written down in House Bill 677, which is public, and we'll have a link to that in the notes on our website for you all to look at. But that is the proper discharge procedure, as outlined in the House Bill 677. So we know that there have been some glitches in this system so far. Individuals shouldn't be ending up homeless, but some are. We have had reports from a couple of shelters in the state that they have had individuals coming to them after being discharged from an adult care home. Some of these are not necessarily a direct discharge into the shelter, but they are ending up within the shelter system after being discharged from adult care homes. We have heard that some adult care homes are not issuing written discharge notices or giving 30 days notice to individuals. And we've also heard that they're not notifying the DSS LME discharge teams that they are discharging individuals. We also have heard that some individuals may have been led to believe that they needed to leave the adult care home so that they wouldn't lose their Medicaid. With the whole IMD issue, some individuals are leaving adult care homes because they've been told if they don't, they will lose their Medicaid funding for services. And finally, some adult care homes have started to discharge residents in order to avoid just being labeled an IMD to begin with. So again, they are looking to lower that percentage of below 50% of individuals within their adult care home for a mental health diagnosis. So we know that some holes have already started to form within this system and people are falling through the cracks. And that's why we really wanted to provide you guys with some alternatives and procedures when you do see this happening and individuals showing up within the shelter system. So I'm going to bring Denise on next to talk about what we can do when we see individuals in our communities coming out of adult care homes and ending up in the homeless system.
All right, thanks, Emily. I know that was a lot of detailed information to go over with Emily. We have obviously been working over the past year of putting a lot of those puzzle pieces into place. If you have any questions or more insight, we invite you to share that over chat, and also, as always, contact us after the call through email or just giving us an old-fashioned phone call. So as Emily said, we have been starting to hear that there are some individuals who are ending up in homeless shelters. Again, it may not be directly from an adult care home. It may not be. There are very few who have already been labeled as IMDs. And so, again, it may not be that just, you know, in the very beginning we were just talking about IMDs. It's really this issue that has really started panic across adult care homes of trying to avoid becoming an IMD that's really started to already push some folks out or really start to discharge folks. We know that some of those discharges are going well. We're not saying that nothing's going well. There are things that are going well, but really I think you all know that in homelessness, we are where it shows up when things don't go well, when people fall through the cracks. And so we want to make sure that we, as a system, are somehow capturing that information. And so we've got a process set up of what you can do to help us track this information. It's important for us to create this feedback loop to the state and to the community. So the state has a hold of who's coming out, who doesn't have resources. So your community may know that and may be able to help help prioritize a response. It's also important because we would like to advocate that these individuals have access to those DOJ resources when they do come. We don't think that it's fair that individuals who have already been discharged out of adult care homes may be left out of that settlement once that finally does come around. We also have advocated and will continue to say that those individuals who are homeless because of the same reason of there not being appropriate settings in the community, of there being a dearth of permanent supportive housing in the first place, folks who are already homeless, we want to continue to advocate for them that they access some of those resources as well. So now, and with that, we really now see some new people coming into the homeless system, or really, you know, it's bigger than the homeless system, just now coming into the market, into the housing market, for limited resources, for limited rental assistance, for limited service providers who provide tenancy supports. And we really don't, you know, our position will be that we don't value any one individual over another. So the last thing we want to see is new people competing for limited resources when we already knew we didn't have enough. So we're really trying to make sure that we don't see this crisis. And the best thing we can do is to start tracking those numbers now and follow up with these individuals. So what you can do is you can help us track these numbers in CHIN. We're going to talk about how you put that into CHIN, which is the Carolina Homeless Information Network. That's the homeless management information system that homeless service providers use across the state. That's in all 100 counties except for Mecklenburg, and we'll have to work with Mecklenburg to make sure we can track this information there too. And then we also have a follow-up process that we want you to do with NCCH, and we have a couple of forms we're going to go over here. And then we also know that there's some resources that we'll want to start connecting these individuals to. So to track these individuals in CHIN, what we can get from CHIN, of course, is not personalized information. So when the coalition gets information or when the state gets information from CHIN, we're just getting aggregate numbers. We may be able to tell that a certain shelter had three individuals come through that had been from adult care homes, but we won't be able to tell who those individuals were. So But it is important to keep this information in chin. It's going to be really help you guys know where folks are coming from as well. So we've added in chin a specific question to track all individuals who have been in an adult care home in 2012. And chin has reported to us today that some of you are already using this question. You're already tracking it. We've already started to see some numbers being put into that. Again, this does not have to be a direct exit from an adult care directly to shelter. You all know who used CHIN, that there's a question on there that asked about where was the last place that this person was or where are they coming from. That question may not get at the information we want, because we know that there may be some people who are in an adult care home may go to a different situation that doesn't work out and end up in shelter. So we're wanting to be able to track all of them. So again, it doesn't have to be direct, but it might be direct. There is a question that has been added on the program entry exit screen. So that's the program enrollment step where you as the user are indicating what program the client is participating in. So it's when you're enrolling them in the program, so enrolling them in the shelter. The question in CHIN is, has the client lived in an adult care home in 2012? And then it says, if yes, select the most recent home. Now, there's going to be a list of adult care homes that will help CHIN stay updated. It's going to be that it won't be the list of all the adult care homes across the state. It's going to be the ones that we think are the most at risk. On the next slide, we'll just go ahead and look at what that looks like in CHIN. So you can see here that this question circled in red is that question we went over. Has a client lived in an adult care home in 2012? If yes, select most recent home. That drop-down list is going to pull up into this, which you see here, where there will be several options. You'll see you might want to select has not been in an adult care home in 2012. This is an important one that you answer for everyone. You don't want to just answer for the ones that answer yes. If they say no, we want you to put it in there that they have not been in there. That makes us know that we've got a good data quality. So regardless of how the client responds, we want you to put an answer in here. So you might say they haven't been in an adult care home. You might say that they have been in another adult care home that's not on this list. The client could certainly refuse to answer, or if it's a lit, you'll want to look and see if it's an adult care home that's on the list. If it is on the list, select that adult care home so we know where they're coming from. So this again will help us get some of that aggregate information and give us a good idea of how many people we're talking about, how many folks are coming out. But then we know that doesn't give us all of the information. And so we've created another process that is, it's entirely voluntary. This is voluntary on your part and it's voluntary on the client's part. So make sure you make that clear that this is a voluntary process. We first have this form that's a release of information. This release of information will allow the individual to share information with NCCEH. It will then allow us, we'll be collecting the information at NCCEH, but we want to make sure that we have the ability to share the information with the state if we need to, so that DHHS will cover state offices. It might also cover LME and MCO staff. It could also cover DSS, so all of those players that are involved. We want to make sure that we can share this information to make sure that we are helping people get connected with resources that they need. We also are going to be sharing that information with Disability Rights, which is an organization that helps advocate for consumers. And so we think they'll be able to play even possibly more of a role than NCCH can on connecting with you all individually about the each situation. So if the individual agrees to provide these agencies with information, we want you to complete this form. It's pretty straightforward, your standard consent. We want you to complete it and then also submit it with the next form. So the next form asks some basic questions about the resident. It's going to ask, well, first it's going to ask information from you. Who is this completing this form? Your contact information. We'll, of course, want to be able to get back in contact with you to ask more questions and follow up. And if there's anything we can do to help connect to resources, of course, we will be doing that. We don't want to overpromise here. We don't want want any misunderstandings. Filling out this information does not necessarily guarantee access to resources, but we do think that it's a step in the right direction of getting the information and making sure that we've got information on individuals so we can advocate for them to be able to access resources in the future. On this form, you'll also see some questions about the individual. Particularly, there's a couple of questions around what adult care home are they coming from and how did they get to the shelter. But we'll be using this to get back in touch with you with the individual. And I don't think we put it on here, but if the individual does have their own contact information that we can contact them directly, you can also include that. A lot of folks have email addresses that you may be able to include. So please include that as well. We tried to keep it a simple form. When you fax this to us, we'll be following up with those partners, but also following up with you. And honestly, we have no idea how many of these we're going to get. So we'll be keeping you updated on our process and how we're keeping track of those along the way. We'll continue to email the list of registrants from today's call with updates, and we'll be updating information on our website. So again, the three steps are to track it in CHIN, make sure you're answering that question in CHIN. When you ask the question in CHIN, if they say yes, that's when we want you to get out this paperwork, fill out the release of information, fill out the form, and send it to us here at NCCH. And then we'll make sure to be in contact with you and talk about the next steps on that notification. Both of those forms you can find on our website, the link that we sent out earlier, and we'll show that again here on the call. We know, however, that, again, there are not resources committed to this population that's coming out. So we don't have a magic pot of resources here that when you send us information that we're going to get, that it will be a seamless connection. We anticipate that, or we hope that this transition team will come up with a system. So hopefully at some point when you're referring folks, we can just be able, and filling out this information, we can just send you on to a state referral system. We have no idea what that looks like yet. And so for now, we want you to have some resources now. So again, that your local DSS is in charge of the discharge team process. What we are hearing from folks now is that the adult care home is not triggering that team. So that team has no way of knowing that that individual has been released for the adult care home. Now, a lot of those teams are ready and waiting to start to work with individuals and try to connect them to resources, but they won't know that they're there unless you tell them. So we want you to contact your local DSS. You can send that information to us. We'll try to help make sure that that connection is made. We'll be putting up those, as more information is available about all the local contacts, we'll continue to post those on our website. One thing that we know is particularly important, if someone is in an IMD, it's been labeled an IMD, then it could be that when they come out to you, their Medicaid could have been cut off. Their Medicaid can get reconnected. So one role that you can play is help get folks reconnected to Medicaid, get their Medicaid turned back on. That's another role for your local DSS, another reason why it's so important to get connected to them. We know that Medicaid makes a big difference in the kind of services that an individual gets. There's also going to be, of course, resources at your local LME and or MCO. Some of you your area may not have transitioned to MCO yet. That's managed care organization. So some of you are now MCOs and some of you are now in LME areas. So whatever the case may be, we want you to get connected to those folks who are in charge, at that organization. There should be someone who's assigned to the discharge team process. Again, as we get local contact information, better information, we'll be sharing that. That person should also be able to get reconnected to services. In a lot of cases, this seems to be the housing specialist, but in many cases, we're hearing that it's someone in care coordination. So it may not, but if you have a contact at your LME, of course, contact them and see if they can tell you who the best person is to connect with there. You can also always go directly to Disability Rights North Carolina. We've got their website here. Local legal aid is an important one that you can also get connected with. And then, of course, the state office at DHHS. They're, so far, we don't know that there's one person that we're supposed to be reporting everything to. As soon as we get that, we'll be sharing that information with you as well. So again, we're working on getting contacts. I'm sure that as they iron out the transition plan, hopefully a lot of this will be a lot more clear. It's a little bit muddy right now, but we are we're trying to piece things together, and we'll keep putting that information out as we get it. There is some good news as of today. In addition to knowing that there will eventually be some resources from the DOJ settlement, we know that as of today, there is a new IPRS service definition. So what that means is that's the state pot of money. So when folks are getting services through the LME or MCO, they're either getting services because they have Medicaid, or folks who don't have Medicaid get IPRS funding. So there are some there's a new billable code, which I think is just a step in the right direction for us getting some services for tenancy supports. Again, the tenancy supports are the things that folks need in order to remain in housing. Things like learning how to work with a landlord or learning how to use a stove, all of these things that particularly I think a lot of individuals who are coming out of adult care homes and haven't had a kitchen are in a similar place that a lot of our folks who have been homeless are. So again, that's an IPRS billable code. That's going to be optional for LMEs and MCOs, so that's something you can advocate at your local LME or MCO that they adopt this IPRS billable code for tenancy supports. We are currently also, NCCH has advocated to have the same kind of billing rights for tenancy supports for Medicaid, and that project is moving forward in the state. So we're glad to say that, and eventually there will be more good news about being able to bill tenancy supports. So again, we hope you've kind of have more of an understanding of the situation at the end of this call, more understanding of how these puzzle pieces are coming into place, particularly how it is impacting the homeless system and how we hope to avoid a bigger impact than we've already seen. I wish we were on this call saying we're going to be able to prevent all of this homelessness because we have these resources dedicated. I think we'll all be really looking to this new Blue Ribbon Commission to put a good plan in place and quickly. You can find materials on our website here at our website /ACH. Again, that's ncch.org/ACH. You're going to be able to find that former adult care home resident form. You're going to be able to find the client consent for release of information. You'll find slides from today's call. We will be posting the transcript from the call. We know it's a lot of information really fast, so we'll actually be posting the transcript from the call with those slides later this week, and we'll email all of you when that gets posted. And then as we move forward, we'll be updating that page with information. We cannot let you go without asking you to please become a member of NCCEH. All of our ability to engage in these type of conversations and these type of projects, kind of undertaking this new reporting, all of this is because of our memberships. And so if you're on the call today and you're a member, we want to thank you for being a member. You make this possible. If you're on the call today and you're not a member, we would love for you to become a member and encourage others to do so. It's easy to become a member on our website, and you can become an individual or an organizational membership. Again, memberships are the reason that we're able to do this type of work. If you have more questions, you can contact us. You see my email here, and you see Emily's email here as well. You've got our phone number that rings all of our offices here at the Coalition. If you're not on our mailing list, you can go to our website and join our mailing list. And again, we thank you for being a member or becoming a member, and thank you for being on the call. I think, do we have any questions coming through on chat? All right, no questions coming through on chat. So if you guys come up with questions, email them to us. We'll email out information. We'll we'll take another minute and see if there's any questions before we get off the call. Okay. We're going to take that as we were really clear. You understood it all. And we, again, really thank you for your time. We look forward to working with you on this. We have always really appreciated working with you on solutions, and we thank you for being on the call to help us work on another solution here. Thanks, everyone, and have a great Monday.